Good. All right, and now, brought to you live at LinuxConf.au 2008, fresh from Perth, Australia, I give you Leon Brooks.
Okay, Leon knows so much about GIMP and programming it and scripting it that Akana Peck is going to be taking the talk instead. And she's a much better choice. She's been a Mozilla developer, she's been open source for more than half the years I've been alive, I think, and knows a fair bit about it. And training people in GIMP is very valuable because a number of years ago I loaned my sister-in-law my Sony camera. And she borrowed it for 10 days, gave it back, said that's nice. And 2 days later, she spent $8,000 on a brand new Canon, flashes, stand, stuff like that, became an independent photographer. Her experience up to that point was playing French horn, and she had no money for software, so she started using GIMP. And at first she whinged about stuff that certain other products would do and hers wouldn't. But fairly quickly, maybe a couple of months, she was at the point where she was doing stuff with the GIMP that amazed people, and she could not do it with the other products. So the value in training is amazing. And I myself got a boost when I got the little Learning the GIMP videos. And what you're getting is real life Akana Peck, who actually knows what she's talking about.
Well, great. That intro leads really well into GIMP scripting. Because one of the coolest things about GIMP that a lot of people don't tend to explore is that it can be scripted. So all that cool stuff that the other program can do that you think GIMP can't, scripting may be the answer. And this was on the wiki. You're not required to follow along. You don't have to have a laptop. But if you want to, I have some templates for various languages and some samples that you can download there. And so if you want, you can find it from the wiki too as I move on. So let's start with languages. First of all, who here is already a developer or programmer? Pretty much everybody. Good. So I don't have to worry about explaining like what a loop is or anything like that. Okay, GIMP is written in C, of course, and that's the basic language for plugins. Most of the things you see in the filters menu or in all of those menus in GIMP, the colors menu, those are mostly plugins written in C. But it also has lots of other languages that it can be programmed in. ScriptFoo is the one I'll be talking about the most. It's a dialect of Scheme, which itself is a dialect of Lisp. And don't let that scare you, because it's actually the sort of programming you do in GIMP plugins is not the sort where you really need to know a lot about the recursive nature of Lisp or functional programming. There's Python is a scripting language, or Perl is a scripting language. Technically, they're plugins, and that's a minor difference, but I'll mention why later. So ScriptFoo, it's the GIMP's native scripting language. The mic is going in and out, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Maybe that'll help. Okay, GIMP's native scripting language is ScriptFoo. It's built into GIMP. It's been built into GIMP since 1.0 probably. So it's been around a long time. There are a lot of scripts written in it. It's based on Scheme, and I'll talk more about that later. As I said, there's lots of sample code. There are lots of scripts that come with GIMP, and there are also scripts you can get by doing a Google search. It runs on all GIMP versions, sort of. With 2.4, GIMP changed to a new ScriptFoo engine. It changed from a dialect of Scheme called SIOD, which stands for Scheme in One Defon, if you're into Scheme, to something called Tiny Scheme, which is more compliant with the Scheme standard. Scheme programmers prefer it. It's maybe a little bit faster. There are pros and cons. But it's not 100% compatible with the old script foo. So lots of old scripts had to be rewritten, and I'll talk a little bit about the differences. There's a migration guide on the GIMP website, and these slides will be available, so you can get the URL or you can just search for migration guide. But it's still changing. So here's the deal. I was 2 weeks ago, I had this talk all planned. I had all my script foo slides, and I was going to concentrate on script foo because that's the one you can count on every GIMP user having. You know, they don't have to have Python installed on their Windows box or their Mac or whatever. Script foo is just completely built in, and you can write a script and it'll work on GIMP 1.4 or 2.0 or anything. And then they changed to the new Tiny Scheme. And there were some minor changes, but the migration guide is pretty straightforward. It's not really very hard to migrate an old script foo to the new engine. And then a couple weeks ago, I was helping somebody on the GIMP IRC channel, and he had downloaded a couple of scripts from the GIMP registry. And so I said, if they're not working for you, tell me where to get them, and I'll see if they work for me. And I tried them locally, and I found that they worked in my GIMP 2.2 that I keep around to help people who haven't upgraded yet. And they didn't work in my newly built tree of 2.4, but it turned out that it did work on the Ubuntu 2.4 and not the newer one that I had just SVN updated. Turns out that script foo just changed to a new version of Scheme because the new Scheme standard is R6 RS Scheme, and Tiny Foo is now compatible with that. And not only did a lot of scripts on the registry not work with that, but nearly every script that's part of GIMP had to be rewritten. And that kind of shattered the whole idea of script foo being compatible everywhere. You write it once and anybody can use it. And I'm not so sure anymore. So I think I'm moving to Python. Yeah, so I'm going to talk about both. And I'll start by talking about script foo. It still is the most compatible, but be aware that it's not quite as stable as it used to be. And I have some opinions about people who do things like that. OK, so getting started, you can go and look for documentation if you can find any and study it and try to write stuff from scratch. Or you can go out and find a script that does something similar to what you want and modify it. I'm always a big fan of finding a script and modifying it. So you can find them. The GIMP source is full of scripts. They're in, if you happen to have a GIMP source tree, I think it's plugins/scriptfoo/scripts are all the scripts that come natively with GIMP, plus a few more that are actually there but not installed by default. So it's a good place to look. Registry.gimp.org is another good place. That's undergoing a revamp, and the user interface isn't too good right now, but there's a new one about to come online, and the registry is going to get a lot more usable. So that'll be a good place to search. But even now, it has lots of examples of scripts. Or you can just Google for GIMP script, or GIMP script and whatever you're trying to do. So if you're following along, we'll take the file tshelloworld.scm. That's something that's distributed with a GIMP source, but it's not installed by default. So where am I? Somehow, that's not really where I expected to be. Yeah, that's where I wanted to be. OK. The way you install a script is you copy it to your home directory, .gimp-version, scripts. And then I'm going to use VI because VI has very good parenthesis matching, so it's a pretty good editor for Scheme. And this really is just a hello world. The whole script would fit on the page if I hadn't made my font really big. This is big enough to read, I hope, for everybody? Okay. Oh. Sorry.
No, you don't get that choice.
Kill all the legs. Is that better?
Ooh. Okay. Okay, so now that this is installed, I had a GIMP already running. And to get it to see any changes you make to scripts, the extensions menu, script foo, refresh scripts. And of course, after you install a script, there's no visible change in GIMP and you have no idea where it went. So it's usually easiest to look at the source and see where it registers. And in this case, I think it's off the screen. In this case, it's registering in the toolbox window, extensions, languages, script foo, test. Oh, and remember there was a languages placeholder there, but that doesn't actually show up, and I'll talk about that later. It made its own test submenu. Comes up with a nice dialog. I'll take all the defaults. So, not a very interesting script, but it's a good place to start. Let's talk a little bit about Lisp. I'm going to assume that most people aren't that familiar with Lisp, and if you are, it'll be a bit of review. Lisp, you may or may not know, stands for lots of irritating, stupid parentheses. And you declare variables with let or let star. There's a subtle difference between them, which is that I'll show an example later. You're always safe with let star. And then the various commands, and then you close all your parentheses. Okay, so in the case of the difference between let and let star is that in let star you can define height in terms of width. You can define later variables in terms of earlier ones. If you don't use let, if you don't add the star, then it's a little bit more efficient, but you'll never notice the difference. So when in doubt, use let star. And the reason I say mandatory in GIMP 2.4, one of the big differences between the old SIOD and the new tiny scheme is that you must declare all variables. So if you were going to refer to width or height later on, you've got to have a let or a let star to declare them early in the program. Conditionals use prefix notation if image mode and RGB are equal to each other, then do color stuff, else do gray stuff. And you can have ands and ors and all those standard logical operations. And you can get harder conditionals where, you know, you call a function to test whether the GIMP selection is empty, have to pass the image because a selection, every image has its own selection. And see. So one interesting thing here is that car. This is my car if it were modified to be a limousine. But car in Lisp means the first element in a list. So a list is anything between parentheses. Of course, it's recursive, so you kind of list within lists. And the car of a list, it stands for content of address register, but you don't need to know that. And car is actually very important in GIMP because every script foo function will return a list. And usually the first thing you have to do is take the car of that list to do anything with it. So I'll go back to that one. So when you run the function GIMP selection is empty, it returns a list that is either where the first element is either true or false. Take the car of that, compare it against true or false. Okay, and loops work pretty much like conditionals. You have while loops. You don't really have for loops, so you have to do them, you know, you have to set y equal to y plus 1. So it's all a lot more awkward than in C or Python or Perl or a more normal language, because it's not really the sort of thing Lisp is intended to do. And set star is something that you will use quite a bit in script foo. If you're a Lisp programmer, you're going, ew, because you don't really want to write Lisp like that. But okay, so what I'm going to do, whoops, that one. I'm still there, right? Okay, so I'm going to take this sftemplate.scheme. I probably have to get out of the way for you to see that. There. sftemplate.scheme is a really minimal template, even more minimal than Hello World. Actually, let me show you what I want to do with this. I'm going to write a script to do a kind of a neat text effect. So I took this picture last week while I was driving around west of Melbourne on the Great Ocean Road and London Bridge. This is that cool bridge where there used to be a connecting point to the mainland, so you could walk out on it. And something like 10 years ago, it collapsed while people were actually standing on the outer part. It's pretty cool. And I'm sure it was exciting for them. They were stranded there for quite a few hours and finally rescued by a helicopter. But no one was injured, so it's okay. And it's beautiful. It's really a lovely drive, and I recommend if you have a little time, go do it. So, you know, I have a text layer, I have the image layer, and this is a really nifty little trick that somebody showed me a while back to make the text look three-dimensional. What you do, I have the text layer selected, and what I'm going to do is, where was that? It's layer transparency, alpha to selection, which is going to select the text. So now the text is selected and nothing else. And then I'm going to invert the selection. So now everything but the text is selected. And then I do a drop shadow. Filters, light and shadow, drop shadow. And this allow resizing parameter, I'm going to turn that off, but I'm going to leave everything else as the default and get this dialogue out of the way. So I'm doing a drop shadow on everything but the text, and I end up with this cool effect. Really easy. It's a little bit like drop shadow and bevel, but it's better and it's easier. So I really like that, and it would be nice to have a script foo to do it. So I'm going to make one. So I'm going to undo here. And I'm going to copy SF template to my scripts directory. And I'm going to give it a name, so I'll call it Blobify. It kind of makes the text look blobby. Edit that. And so the first thing to do, well, is change all these rename me's. This is kind of a namespace. It's convention to name all your script foos a script foo something. You don't have to, but it makes it easier to find later on when you look for the procedures that are registered that way. I'm going to put it in, I'll put it next to drop shadow and light and shadow. Oh, look at that. And and of course I should fill in all of these things. There are two fields where you generally see the author's name. There's the author's name and the person who owns the copyright on the file. And in practice, for something like GIMP, it's always the same. I don't think I've ever seen a script foo that had different answers for those. But you know, if you're professionally writing script foos for a company or something, I suppose it might come up. I'm not going to fill in all of these right now. And down here are where you would put parameters to the function. So if I wanted to let you specify, you know, how much shadow to have or what color or whatever, I'd put them there. I'm not going to do that now. So what's the first thing we did? The first thing we did was do alpha to selection, basically. Take the text layer and turn that into a selection. So how do I find out how to do that? The way I do that is from the toolbox, the extensions menu, procedure browser. Doesn't seem to be doing it. And you get a list of every procedure that's registered in GIMP, which includes all the built-in libgimp functions that you can access from a plugin, and also everything that's defined from plugins that are currently loaded. And I'm going to search for selection. And then you have to kind of guess which name might be what you want. Manage path to selection. There it is, yeah. Yeah, and that's exactly what I want. So GIMP selection layer alpha. Notice that it uses hyphens. And it takes one parameter, which is the layer. Generally, GIMP scripts that operate on an image will take these two arguments, image and drawable. Drawable and layer mean pretty much the same thing. Every layer is a drawable, not every drawable is a layer, like the GIMP's quick mask is a drawable. So drawable is kind of a wider class of things. First the image. Wait, no, it was the layer. Okay. So we get the selection, then we invert it. GIMP selection invert is pretty clearly what I'll want there. Takes one parameter, the image. And then I did the drop shadow. And of course, another way of finding these functions without using the procedure browser is that you can go to a directory where you have a lot of GIMP scripts and just grep, you know, grep for selection, grep for alpha. And sometimes that's easier. These parameter lists aren't always incredibly clear in terms of how you pass them to a script foo. What I'm going to do, I'll move this over here so I can look at it at the same time. Script foo drop shadow. And the prompt. You'll see run mode a lot here. That's not something that you have to pass. That tells it whether it's interactive, like whether it's going to put up a dialogue or not, or whether it can be run in the background, because it is possible to run GIMP as something that, say, runs on your web server and modifies images. But most people don't use it that way. So image drawable. Okay, offset X, offset Y, let's say, I don't know, 8. Blur radius, 12 maybe. Colors in script foo are lists of R, G, and B. I think you can also pass a string like quote black but I'm going to just say 0, 0, 0. So I'm going to pass black. And opacity, the way to find out what it wants for opacity is to find out what it's actually asking in its dialogue. Remember, this is drop shadow, and it's the same drop shadow that I run interactively. So it wants a percentage. So 80 sounds good. And then allow resize, that one last parameter. So I'm going to write that. My mouse is running away. Close the procedure browser. And then again, refresh scripts. And let's see how many mistakes I made. Blobify is doing something. Yes. Oh, I forgot. Now, one thing I forgot was to get rid of the selection afterward. So I'm going to do that. Oh, this is undoable, and I'll show you why. So I'm going to undo here. It's undoable because of these two commands, which I put in the template file, because basically you always want to do that in a script. You know, you can make undo groups, and you can even do that recursively. So you can make a small percentage of the operation undoable atomically, and then make the whole thing undoable. So that's going to take an image too. So let's just get it right. There. Blobify. Very easy. Mm-hmm. Yes. That's true, yeah. Yeah, if I were really going to use this, I probably would put in a dialogue. And in fact, let's go ahead and do that. So let's go back to this. You know, rather than taking out the ellipses, let's make it more complicated. Okay, so the way we do this is copy from another script, right? Did that have a size? Yeah. So how about if I just grab that line? Can't see my keyboard. That's going to start out at 100, which is going to be a lot more than what I want. The first number is the important one. That's the one, that's the default value. Everything else controls how fast it moves with a slider. I'll talk about that in a little bit. But let's, I said 8, yeah. Okay, I think that's right. And then now that I have an additional parameter, I'll have to pass it. So everybody see what I'm doing? Yeah, I mean, okay. I added this SF adjustment line, which for right now is magic. I'll talk about how they work later, but I copied it from another script, which is always the way to go. I made the default value 8. I passed it as a third parameter. So now image, drawable, and offset are my three parameters corresponding to here. It's too bad the D is off the screen. And then I'm passing it as the offset where I call drop shadow. Undo. Did I already refresh scripts? I did, okay. I couldn't remember. Really wish GTK menus wouldn't unpost when you. Okay, and now I have a dialog. And it's an ugly dialog, and I don't have the name of the script or anything like that, but I could fix that later. But let's do it with a small offset. And you know, it may or may not be visible, but it's definitely less blobby now than it was before. So all this stuff is pretty easy, adding, you know, making dialogues and having nice adjustments and everything. That's all built into ScriptFoo, and you don't have to do a lot of work. So let's go back to the slides. Okay. These are all the things that I already did. Now, I registered in the menu using ScriptFoo register, and this particular, is that what I did on that one? Okay, you notice that this doesn't have ScriptFoo menu register, it just has one function it's calling. But the first, the TS Hello World had two. There are two different ways to do it. The GIMP developers want you to use this two-part registration, so the name of the function goes there in ScriptFoo register, but you don't actually put it in the menus until you call ScriptFoo menu register with the location of the menus. And it's a little more flexible because it means you can have one function that shows up in lots of different places in the menus. For example, you might have something that belongs in the layers menu and the colors menu or something like that. There are a lot of things like that in GIMP that show up in multiple places. So it's useful to know about ScriptFoo menu register. The problem is that it only works in 2.4 and I think very late 2.2 versions. So if you want to distribute your script to other people, you actually can't do this. Or you can do it, but you have to check to see whether the symbol ScriptFoo menu register is bound. And I have an example of that in the templates directory. So if you want to do it that way, that's fine. I've kind of gotten cynical, and I've gone back to using ScriptFoo register and putting it all in one, which means that I'm evil and bad from the point of view of the GIMP developers, and perhaps I'll come around one of these days. It's your choice. So there's the old style of registration. Menus. So that's, I mentioned before. Yeah. Okay. You saw that the first part of a registration is the window. So there's an image window, a toolbox window. You can also put it in, for instance, the layers dialog or the channels dialog or lots of other windows within GIMP. Most of the time, it'll be going to one of these two places, though. And then everything else, slash separated, is where in the menus of that window. And notice this languages is a placeholder. Python foo and script foo are grouped together in the menu because there's a placeholder called languages that you can't see. It doesn't even make a separator in the menu, but it does group them together. And of course, since you can't see it, how do you know it's there? How do you know what it's called? Oh, I'll go back to that. The easiest way to do it is get the GIMP source and grep for placeholder, and you can find all of the useful placeholder functions. You can put everything that deals with open or save together, and you've probably noticed that before. So it's nice not to have your script go to the very end of the menu. It's nice to group it with other scripts that are functionally similar. Okay. So notice there's an image window and an image menu. So here's the image menu in the image window. So don't be confused by seeing image used both of those ways. And we've already done refresh scripts, so. Okay, these are all the various things you can, well, these aren't all of them. These are samples of the various things you can put in the dialog. You've seen SF adjustment, that's what you use when you want to get an integer, and there are actually two types. You can get one with a slider bar, or you can get one that just has a text field and up and down arrows. You can have a color picker, you can have a font chooser, and these are all done for you, so you don't have to write any of the UI. And yeah, these are the two types of adjustments. So it can look like that, or it can look like that. And the way you find out the complete list of what you can have is by looking for testsphere.scm, or by my book, which has the list. But if you want to do it for free, you can look for testsphere. Do I have that here? I don't. But if you have GIMP source installed, you can locate it. And this is basically a fairly useless program that has useful comments. And the only reason it's in the GIMP source is as a sample, as basically documentation. Now, I can't remember if I have this installed. It goes in languages script foo test. Okay. So if I run that, scripts. Wait. Oh, refresh scripts sometimes takes a while if you have a slow machine test. And you need more than 768 pixels vertical to see them all. But you see, you can get a gradient chooser. You can get all kinds of things. Color chooser. So it's useful to have testsphere around just in case you forget what's possible. We've already been through the procedure browser. It says procedure browser in the menus, but people usually call it the PDB browser for procedural database. So if you hear people talking about PDB, that's what they mean. Other problem with script foo versus, say, Python or C is error messages. These are some sample error messages you'll see. They generally don't tell you what the problem is, and they don't tell you what line number the problem was. So for debugging, you really don't want to get into great big programs in script foo. It's great for small scripts, but you kind of have to debug by like deleting half the program and seeing which half the error is in, and doing kind of a bisect to get down to the line number. So it's, everybody finds it very frustrating, even the GIMP developers, and people complain about it all the time, but apparently it's hard to implement line numbers. So this isn't going to get any better, realistically. Common errors that you'll see migrating old scripts to tiny scheme are using set on a variable when you didn't declare it with let. That's the number one most common problem. nut checking for null because there's some obscure tiny scheme error you get if you try to do a list operation on something that turns out to be a null list. You have to say 0.5 rather than 0.5. I think that's fixed in later versions of 2.4, but don't count on it. And nil is something that list programmers are very used to using, and usually it's equivalent to the null list, but not in tiny scheme. Oh. So next we'll move into Python, but let's take a short break, and let's take like a 5-minute break, 10, 8. So,
you have 5 minutes.
OK, 5 minutes. OK, take a 5-minute break, stretch your legs, and then we'll move on to Python.
Do you have any music?